Hello, and welcome to the Tech CEO Essentials podcast. We're focused on the top areas that tech CEOs need to know. I'm your host, Tom Cooper, and the podcast is sponsored by my company, Bright Hill Group, where we help leaders get more from their teams. Now, today's topic is product management, and the question is, what are the essentials that a tech CEO needs to know to use product management to grow the company? Today, I've got the privilege of interviewing Steve Johnson from Under10Templates.com. Steve is a popular keynote speaker at forums throughout North America. He's the author of many articles on technology, product marketing, and management, and as well as some ebooks that you should check out. And before founding Under10Templates, Steve was a pragmatic marketing instructor for 15 years and personally trained thousands of product managers and hundreds of company senior executive teams. And I have to say, Steve is a great instructor. He was in his training, and he did a fantastic job with the material that he was covering for me and gave me a great perspective on product management as I was moving forward in my role as a product manager back in the day. So, Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, just to kind of get started, at the highest level, what is product management?
Well, product management is delightfully ill-defined, and certainly in the technology industry and many others. But ideally, product management is a lot of developers call the one throat to choke. You know, there's one place to go to get the answer to everything. I remember reading an interview years ago with Bill Campbell at Intuit, and he said, if you were a startup, the second hire would be a product manager. Because the product manager figures out the rest of it. You know, we often come up with, you know, hey, let's build a thing, but what the customer really wants is that thing wrapped in services and delivered in multiple pieces, for instance. Anyway, the product manager's job is really to be the president's representative at the product level, looking at it from soup to nuts. Is there a business to be had here? Is there a market need that we can address? And when we talk about product, we don't just mean software or hardware. We mean what's the whole product. And I was talking to somebody just an hour ago about the Nest thermostat, yep, which is big right now. And I have one. It's just beautiful. And it seems to me that there was clearly a product manager looking beyond the thermostat. I mean, there are plenty of thermostats out there. You can buy one from, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's, and they're all generically the same with very difficult to understand user interfaces. And so the Nest thermostat's very, very easy to use. But more than that, it's an entire product. When you hook it up, it verifies that the wiring is correct. When you get it working, it says, hey, can I hop on the internet for you? And it synchronizes the thermostat behavior with the weather in your city. It sends me an email once a month telling me about my power consumption and some things I might choose to do to improve my performance. It has an iPod app an iPad app, iPhone app that allows me to manage the thing remotely.
Wow.
And it has a motion sensor that says, you know what, nobody has walked by this thermostat in 24 hours, so I'm going to set the temperature to something reasonable since apparently you're away.
Interesting.
So, and that wasn't just what the other guys did, which is we've got a programmable thermostat that you can program and it will do thermostat. Yeah, they created an entire product.
That's really interesting because you're looking at sort of the need, even if the consumer doesn't understand that need. I mean, I've never thought I want my thermostat to email me. You know, I've thought I'd like my thermostat to help me save money, but I've never thought, I'd like to get an email or recommendations about what I could do to. That's really interesting. So, but I've worked in a number of tech companies, and I've worked with a ton of tech companies, and a lot of them don't do anything they call product management. But don't all companies actually use product management?
Well, yeah. I mean, every company is managing products. The question is whether there's a person with the title. I mean, in a startup, the president is the product manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've it means, you know, what products are we going to build? What revenue can we forecast over time? And in a startup capability, you're probably looking at it in the context of how's this cash flow going to make sure that I make my house payment? But you then multiply that times, you know, a bunch, and you're in a regular business that has a track record, and somebody says, hey, I've got an idea for a product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody's got ideas. The question is, which one should we pursue? Is there one here that we should fast track, or is there and is it targeting a market full of customers, or is it one sales guy talked to one customer who had one need and they're never going to be able to sell it again?
Right. Well, so really what you're talking about is a methodology or a process to prioritize feature requests.
Exactly. I mean, ideas come from everywhere, right? The executives have ideas, sales guys have ideas, customers have ideas, product managers have ideas, developers have ideas. And the first step of the process or the method around product management is a vetting process that says, you know what, we can't do everything, so we need to be able to pick carefully which ones we do allocate resources to. Once we've done that, we need to break the idea down into the deliverables. And if we started from, I want to build a thermostat, then you'd build a thermostat. If we started from, customers are increasingly passionate about smart energy, and let's build a energy management solution, then you end up saying, not just I need to do some circuit boards in a round box for a thermostat. It's the bigger thing that I talked about earlier. And so idea becomes, what are the parts we need to build? And we keep breaking that down into the constituent parts. And it's equally true, the same thing is true for, I have an idea for an existing product. You know, I want the iPad to do this, or I want my Android phone to do that. And we have to look at all those ideas and say, well, which one affects the most people with the most benefit? But beyond that, I mean, that's all product part. Guess what? Marketing that product often involves product management. The people who are doing go-to-market say, I need some help understanding how this tool is used or what features it has and how I explain those to the market. Otherwise, you end up with what David Meerman Scott calls industry gobbledygook. And we just say, you know, we're the market-leading, discontinuous innovation deliverer with proven results.
Hey, wait, I'm writing that down. That's so good.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. And there's not even a TM on that. You can use it. And so we've got this product idea. We are taking it to market. Guess what? We also have to figure out what is the right price point for this. Or do we just throw it to the sales team and say, hey, take a shot. You know, sell it for as much as you can.
Well, now, wait a minute. You're talking about a huge kind of area of responsibility. If you're talking about establishing pricing, looking at the market, marketing communications, feature development, working with the product creation team that's actually going to implement your ideas, that sounds like your product managers need to have a lot of different types of expertise. What kinds of things should you be looking for from product managers?
Very good point. And I think it's important to separate these things. I mean, there are a lot of activities that need to happen in order that we can manage and market a product, and often that is given to the title called product manager. But it may be, you know, director of product marketing, or it may be, you know, senior executive team. But there are a bunch of things that happen between idea and revenue, and somebody has to have oversight of that. But as we go to recruit product managers. Oh, I'm sorry. Real quick one. I talked to a guy yesterday who posted for a director, I think, of product management and marketing. And he said 98% of his resumes were from marketing communications people. That when you say marketing, everybody in this industry seems to say, oh, yes, that's the creative types who build sales tools and go-to-market materials, sales enablement materials. And he said, so I ultimately took the name marketing off the job description so I could get some product people in here. But that's really the point, isn't it? So in terms of expertise, 42% of product managers have an MBA, which means they have strong business skills, and that's one thing people look for. But increasingly, a lot of the teams that I work with have pulled product managers so far into the product creation process that they're really using the product managers for their technical expertise rather than their business expertise.
Interesting.
Furthermore, as I indicated in the director story, you know, a lot of people have, say, marketing expertise, but more important than that is an understanding of markets. Like, we want to market our product in Brazil. We want to market our product in higher education. We want to market our product in, you know, antivirus or, you know, fraud detection. And so these are markets where we need to have somebody who's an expert in the way those markets talk to one another. And then the fourth expertise is domain expertise. I have a story about a vice president from a bank came up with a fraud method, a fraud detection method, came to a company to turn it into a product, and because he had both domain and market expertise, the company misused him. So he came to the company to leverage his domain expertise to create a product. But because he came from the world of banking, every sales guy on the planet called and said, hey, I need you to come talk bank with one of my buyers.
Right.
And so he was on the road for 9 months until he finally threw up his hands in despair and said, now I'm going to go to another company that doesn't need me to come talk bank, but wants me to develop my fraud detection algorithm.
Oh, interesting.
So those are the four expertises. You know, there's business, there's domain, there's technology, there's market. And it's really hard to find all four of those in one person.
Sure. So then do you look for, how do you think of it in terms of a team delivery, or do you think of it, how do you solve that then if you can't find necessarily all four of those in one person?
Indeed. If I were organizing a product management team today, I would look for at least one person in each of those areas.
Interesting.
That... if, let's see, pick an industry. Well, I mentioned higher ed earlier. I went to college a long time ago. I wouldn't say I know much about the world of university. I do know costs have gone up a lot lately, but that's about what I know. So I would hire somebody who has a deep domain knowledge in higher education. You know, what are the trends in the industry? And that would be the person I would use for all of my thought leadership pieces.
Okay.
Rather than talking about product, talking about trends in the industry. I would hire a technical person to work with development, turning the ideas that we're finding into the development deliverables. I would hire a market specialist. If we chose to sell to universities in the Americas and universities in Asia and universities in Europe, I'm guessing those are different.
Makes sense.
And so I remember one of my vice president's colleagues years ago did a little presentation from the context of non-U.S. thinking. And he put up dates where the numbers were in the wrong order.
Right.
You know, he used commas instead of periods. He put U's in words that didn't deserve them.
Right.
He talked about summer, you know, and you're like, wait a minute, you're right. If you're in Australia, summer's different.
Exactly.
So what does it mean launching this summer? Right.
Right.
And then the fourth thing I don't know that I mentioned, I would want to actually. As I'm talking this through, I'm thinking of a fifth one. But anyway, I would certainly want somebody on staff who had strong analytical skills with a business background, you know, who can turn ideas into spreadsheets. You know, what's our financial roadmap down the road? And yet, often what I do is I'll send if I don't have that business skill on staff, I'll send a market person probably over to finance and say, hey, can you guys help us with a 3 to 5 year revenue and costing breakout? And the VP of finance is delighted to help and generally assigns you to, you know, one of his experts. And they're delighted to help because they haven't done anything meaningful since college, right? I mean, this is the
kind of stuff
that they thought they were going to be doing. But instead, they're just, you know, checking expense reports against policy. Yeah, that was kind of rude, wasn't it?
You know, the one thing about working with you, Steve, is that you know exactly where you stand.
Yes, subtlety is my strength. Yeah,
that's right. So now, in this space, I mean, what you've covered is kind of a huge amount of territory here, and I hear you know, CEOs going, "Oh, that costs just too much. I can't even think about doing that because it's so darned expensive." But really, I think what you've said to me before is it's really about investment for seeing a return. You should be able to see a return on all the money you spend on this.
Exactly, and furthermore, guess what? People are doing this anyway. There are people in your company today who are saying, well, you know, I don't really have deep domain expertise, but I need to know whether I should do it this way or that way. And so they guess.
And what does it cost to
guess? So the real challenge to me is, I mean, sure, you know, everybody wants to do everything on ROI. But for me, it's like, what's the cost of doing it wrong?
That's a really good point. And I think we tend to think that if we don't do it, whatever we're doing today is okay, and it's risky to do something different. It's kind of that myth of risk, that there's actually risk associated with even current state.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when we talk about product management, guess what? It's happening in your company today. The question is, who's doing it? Is it the president?
Yeah.
Is it the VP of sales? Mm-hmm. Are the sales individuals saying, well, we don't have anything, but I decided to partner with that guy over there and bundle my own thing and offer it at a price that's 10% above our cost? And that's an interesting initiative on the part of the sales guy. But wait, is that the business we even want to be in?
Right.
And is 10% enough money to make it worthwhile?
Exactly.
Those are the questions that aren't being asked. Well, and as a company looks at their limited resources, they need to make sure they're putting their limited resources on the thing that has the best value to the company in the long run.
Well, that's fantastic, and I appreciate that kind of perspective because it's a different discipline. People don't necessarily think of it in that way. I appreciate your bringing that perspective to us today. So tell me a little bit about Under 10 Templates. Why Under 10 Templates?
Well, better than that, there's Under 10 Templates. But anyway, I worked with a team a while back, and they said, you know, we've formalized our product planning process. And they handed me a three-ring binder that was, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches thick. And it was delightfully comprehensive, but completely unrealistic. And I reflected back in my first job, 20 years ago, 30 years ago as a product manager, and I had a printed notebook that I kept with me all the time. Mm-hmm. And what happened was people would ask me questions, and I couldn't answer them. And so I started carrying these pieces with me. And I went, okay, well, people ask me about pricing a lot. Let me keep the price list with me. People ask me about positioning a lot. Let me keep the positioning with me. And over time, I've developed 6 or 7 or 8 living documents that I referenced probably daily. And that became my product plan. Instead of having a, you know, 45-page business plan that nobody, including the author, has ever read, why don't we just identify the smallest number, preferably fewer than 10, of living documents that make sense to the executive team? For instance, the kinds of documents I'm talking about is, you know, a roadmap of where are we going down the road, a list of features that we want to build the agilists call a backlog, a price list, a positioning document so that we can inform our marketing people and our branding people and our outside agencies of the product message. And how many of those could replace some of these heavy, dead documents that more established companies are still creating.
That's a really interesting point, and I think it's helpful to have a framework to move forward. And I think you said that you're going to offer up a planning canvas as a resource for folks who are interested in this, in more about this. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. I developed a and canvas is the right word, a place for you to articulate all the different steps between idea and revenue and, for that matter, post-delivery retrospective, and say, you know, who should be doing this step, and what are the minimum set of artifacts that we need to articulate that step? And so, you know, you start with what business are we in and what markets do we serve and what products are we going to build, how are we going to market them, how are we going to sell them, how are we going to support them after the fact. And the part that I think most young companies completely forget about is after the sale, saying, what did we do right, what did we do wrong, and is this even a good customer?
Wow, that's a. I mean, you're really talking about product strategy, and even kind of can lean into corporate strategy type things, which most organizations kind of struggle with, being able to get a clear and articulate strategy. That's fascinating. Hey, I'm sorry to cut you off.
My dentist fires 10% of his customers every year.
Wow.
Because he looks at a post customer retrospective and says, these customers are annoying. And it's not that they don't brush their teeth and floss. It's that they don't show up on time, and they argue about the bill, or they have a difficult insurance carrier. And he says, you know, I've got better things to do than to try and sell the same hour two or three or four times. And I think most companies don't really take that sort of a after-the-sale retrospective to say, what is a good customer for us? And what isn't? And maybe we should fire some of our customers because they don't move us forward strategically.
Wow, that is so definitely a kind of a radical thing, and I think it certainly is worth consideration for sure. So if folks want to dig in and know some more about Steve Johnson and what you're doing, where can they find more information about you?
Please come to under10templates.com, and you'll find lots of stuff there. I've got a description of the Under 10 Planning template that I'm going to share with the people who are listening on this. And I'm blogging there. I've got a bio there. But I think of it really as kind of my online resume. I mean, my belief is that companies want the smallest amount of process that helps them mitigate their risk. And a lot of times they have too much, or frankly, a lot of companies I go to have too little. Do we have time for one more quick story?
Sure.
You can't say no to that, I guess. I worked for a huge company, a billion-dollar software company, and there was so much process, we couldn't get anything done. And so I got recruited into a startup, and I was employee 25. And I got there and I went, this is going to be great. There's no process and we can get stuff done. And then a week later, I was pulling my hair out because there was no process.
Exactly.
And you want to find that fine line between, you know, process that helps move you forward and find that balance for what makes sense in your organization. And that's the kind of stuff that I work with teams on today.
Well, that's great. I appreciate that idea and wrapping it in that way, because I think a lot of times we do find ourselves kind of caught in that middle place. We need some process, but if we have too much process, we can't actually get anything done. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today. For our listeners, I'll invite you to join us next time for more Tech CEO Essentials. We've got other exciting topics coming up on sales and dealing with people problems, communication, accounting, legal, even more, and it's going to be great. For Bright Hill Group, thanks for joining us. This is Tom Cooper signing off.